you know, in life, we're all blessed to have a mission to serve. You got to find that purpose in life. And I felt like September 11, 2001, as a freshman in high school, that's when I felt like my mission in life was to serve this country. And ultimately, I didn't know what branch I wanted to serve with. I just wanted to deploy. I wanted to fight. I signed up December of my senior year in high school. I was 18 years old. I didn't need a parent's signature. I joined the Marine Corps Infantry because I knew right away that they would go over. And September 2005, I went to boot camp. September 2006, I was on a plane headed to Iraq.
Welcome to the Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
All right, the Disruption Zone. I'm Leland Conway along with Cameron Mills. And man, dude, I'm like, I get goosebumps every time I get around this dude. He is such an American hero. Corporal Matt Bradford, he was in the Marines and lost both legs and his eyesight defending yours and my freedom to bloviate. Which
to
is
what?
Pretty amazing. To bloviate.
To blow. Oh, yeah. For us to talk.
Yeah. So we have this freedom because there's men and women like him who are willing to go and sacrifice anything necessary in order to keep us safe. And he is a guy that is, I guess the best way, when we talk about disruptors and innovators, he is not letting what happened to him in the war stop him from doing anything he wants to do.
I said this to Matt probably a year or two ago when, Matt, you were on one of the shows I was doing. It was either my show or actually maybe Leland's show, one of the many times he took a vacation and I was filling in for him. And I had you on. It was and see, Matt makes a joke because he says every time I have him on, it's either Veterans Day, Memorial Day, or 4th of July.
Right.
That's the only reason, Matt. That's the only way Matt Bradford, only time Matt Bradford is good for radio is when we're celebrating America.
Yeah, we bring the military guy in for all the patriotic holidays, Matt.
It makes sense. It makes sense. So anyway, so I made a comment, and Matt, I've told you this. This got me in trouble with a listener. I made a comment about Matt Bradford, and I said, the thing I love about Matt is that if he ever had a bitter bone, it got blown off.
And he laughs.
Well, that's why, again, this is why I love Matt.
I know.
He's got a sense of humor about everything that he's gone through.
I know. It's awesome.
And if he was bitter, I would understand.
Yep.
But you're not.
Yeah. Matt, welcome.
Thank you so much for that introduction. And that's the one thing, you know, the earliest days of my rehab that I had to learn that if I can't make fun of myself, then I'm not going to survive, you know? And it's so funny to be around people that don't understand. Like when I was at UK, I enjoyed it every day. Making these jokes about my legs, vision, and you can always just sense the look on their face, like, should I laugh? Should I say something? Is there something mentally wrong with this guy? And it's truly, it's hilarious to see some of the reactions.
My favorite thing is the fact that it's really hard to tell who your favorite college sports team is when we look at you. Because you have, like, your replacement eye is a UK logo. That's awesome, man.
The glass eye painted with the UK logo.
That is so cool. Yeah. I love that.
In 2007, when they told me in Bethesda, Maryland, that they could put any design on a prosthetic eye, as long as it looks good when they minimize it, then they could put it on there. And I was like, bingo, forget the regular eye. Let's put a design on there. And I've had everything from the UK to the Marine Corps logo symbol. Osama bin Laden with the crosshair on his forehead. So I mean, I've had a little bit of everything. It was almost like,
wow,
you know,
wow, that's awesome.
I wanted to wear a Marine Corps shirt, I'd put a Marine Corps.
All right, I got a question. You can pick one thing to be allegiant to. One thing: the Marine Corps or the Kentucky Wildcats.
Marine Corps all day.
All right, that's no doubt.
That was a lot easier than I expected.
Can you change the eye like anytime you want?
Yeah, it's just suction. You just take a little suction cup, pop it out, and it's about the size of a contact. I mean, it's not the
that's awesome.
Of the eye,
it's like getting a tattoo that you can change. Is what
I know.
I'm
love that.
I mean, basically, he got it. Do you have any other tattoos? Do you have any tattoos?
I don't have any tattoos.
See, he doesn't need any tattoos.
No, he's got that
because he can change his eye.
Yeah,
exactly.
I envision like you have a row of them on your dresser at home, and you're like, today I'll wear the Osama bin Laden one. You know.
It's funny when the eye fell out, last time it fell out a couple years ago, and my wife, she's only put it in one time, and the doctor was there helping her, and she was in tears because she didn't want to hurt me and do all this stuff. And then, like, once she got it in, she walked away, and my daughter walked up and was like, all right, Daddy, let's take out the other eye. And it's like, okay, Layla, that eye doesn't come out.
And this is the Matt Bradford I know, is that your wife was in tears feeling bad for you. I would have been laughing as your eye bounces on the floor. Just because that's Matt. Matt has got, there's nothing about him that is not very aware of his situation and right. very aware of what makes him different. But he's got a, he doesn't just have a sense of humor about it. He's, I don't know what the word is, Matt. God, this sounds, I hate the word normal because there's no such thing as normal, but you are a regular guy. And I think one of the things we make a mistake in doing in treating people with disabilities is that we treat you as though you're not a regular guy. You want to be needled. You want to be made fun of. This is what guys do. Mm-hmm. Guys get around each other. And I imagine this is what you and your platoon, you call them platoons in the Marine?
Just brothers.
All right. That's what you all did. You all needled each other. You made fun of each other. Even when you were laying there, you know, basically almost bleeding out, there were probably some jokes going back and forth as well.
From my earliest days in rehab, I always told myself that I didn't want anybody to take care of me. I was going to do everything on my own. I'm going to learn how to do it. You know, the blind school helped out with learning how to do things on my own, but that's just who I am. I want, when I go out and I interact with people, I want the people to see that, like you said, I'm just a normal person. I got prosthetics. I got vision. You know, who cares? But I can still go out and do everything a normal person can do.
Well, you do far more than what a normal person can do.
I just live my life each day at a time. You know, well, I take the true blessings that we as Americans have, and I just go out and live my life. You know, I do things that I truly love to do.
Let's walk through your story.
Yeah.
Take people back to the very beginning, and you were on tour in Iraq.
Well, we got to go back before that because part of the great part of the story is, Matt, you enlisted during war. It's one thing to enlist when it's not going on, right? When maybe you need it for your GED.
I get a college degree, I'll get it for free.
Exactly. I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, I've got no other way of paying for college, so I'm going to enlist in the Corps or, you know, enlist in the Army or whatever. Matt enlisted because of 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, in life, we're all blessed to have a mission to serve. You got to find that purpose in life. And I felt like September 11, 2001, as a freshman in high school, that's when I felt like my mission in life was to serve this country. And ultimately, I didn't know what branch I wanted to serve with. I just wanted to deploy. I wanted to fight. And I met the Marine Corps recruiter, got in touch with him. You know, we've become really good friends. And I signed up December of my senior year in high school. I was 18 years old. I didn't need a parent signature. I joined the Marine Corps Infantry because I knew right away that they would go over. And September 2005, I went to boot camp. September 2006, I was on a plane headed to Iraq. Mm.
So you signed up for the division of the military that you knew had the best chance of getting in the fight.
I did. I wanted to fight. I wanted to make sure another 9/11 would never happen again. And I wanted to take the fight to the enemy.
By the way, so did we.
I remember what it was
like. I mean, you know what I mean? Leland, you and I did the same thing. We wanted to make sure another 9/11 didn't happen. We didn't do what he did.
No, we didn't.
and you know, I'd go back and do it over and over again, you know, because for me, we're talking about brothers and, you know, the Marine Corps, you know, what it's known for with camaraderie. I tell you what, those 5 months in Iraq was probably truly the greatest 5 months of my life. You know, it's just us in the middle of a town. There's no news. Like, the only way you could write home is a letter in the mail. We had a satellite phone we only got to use twice, I believe.
Twice during your 5 months or twice?
Twice during our 5 months.
Okay.
And it was just us, you know, and we learned a lot about each other. We'd go on, you know, at most 3 patrols a day. We'd come back and we'd just hang out in our little Iraqi home that we stayed in. But it's just...
You stayed in a home with an Iraqi family?
No, our FOB, our forward observing base, was in the middle of town. So we took over, you know, a bunch of little Iraqi houses and build a barriers around them. So we had 2 entry control points where we'd come on base, and, you know, it's just our COC. It was all Iraqi homes. So we were right there in the middle of town. It was a 10-minute walk.
I assume a lot of it, too, is that these are people's homes who have left because they're in the middle of a war zone now.
It was in Haditha at that time where I was deployed to, the Haditha Triad, which they were – I mean, it was in Al-Anbar province. Al-Anbar province at one time was the roughest province in the world.
Wow.
I mean, Fallujah, Ramadi, and all that stuff. So, you know, a couple years ago, before we got there, 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines got hit extremely hard. And the unit that we relieved got hit even harder. And they felt bad that we were getting involved in this. And, I mean, the first couple of days we got there, we got hit hard as well. But it shows the hard work that we put in, and, you know, during that time was a surge of troops. that we were taking back that city because the unit that relieved us didn't take any casualties at all.
The people that weren't involved in fighting against you, were they glad to see you?
They were. The residents, the citizens of the Haditha area, I mean, they were truly glad to see us over there. The government, when I went back in 2011, the newly established government, the military, the Iraqi military, special forces, they were happy that we were there. And, you know, that's, you know, with the whole withdrawal of troops right out of Iraq, I mean, you're given a brand new government, brand new military, you know, now they're got to fight ISIS. Mm-hmm. And that's why Iraq was taken so quickly until we got back in there again. And it truly bothered me because of what was lost, the blood, the sweat, the tears, everything that we did in that country to make it free, because it was moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that withdrawal when all those troops just left and you left a brand new government to kind of fight for itself.
Left that vacuum.
Yep.
What, Matt, take us through a typical day, but before your injury, before all of that and your life forever changed, what's a typical day like when you go out on patrol? I mean, and I mean, be detailed. Take us from sun up, reveille to, you know, at what time do you go to bed and what you're doing throughout the day?
Throughout the day, it all depends, because a lot of times we'd have like a middle-of-the-night patrol. We'd go out 2 or 3 hours to a little sector in town, walk around. We might, like, you know, walk into a house and set up a patrol base, do some overwatch, you know, get the call to return to base, and we'd head back. You know, and then we'd go back, sleep for a couple hours, eat breakfast. Really, you didn't sleep much at all, you know. But when you did sleep, it was the best sleep you'd ever done before. You know, then, like, through the middle of the day is when if we went on patrol, we kind of knew that we were going to get into some kind of engagement. We got in a lot of firefights over there, and especially if we knew our patrol was going to go down by Market Street, Boardwalk, Palm Groves, that's where you automatically put your gun on fire, because something was going to happen. When the city streets were cleared and nobody was out, something was going to happen. And, you know, you kind of learn all these things as you go. And, you know, each patrol, again, like I said, 2 or 3 hours. We do about 3 of them a day. And then, like, once we get back, we just kind of clean our weapons. We just kind of chill, you know, take a nap, eat breakfast, eat lunch, whatever time of the day it is. And just kind of, before patrols, we brief up. We kind of look at the map, and we know where we're going, what route we're going to take, and if we're going to take a house to set up a patrol base and stay there a couple of nights. Or we just, and, you know, we go out and do our loop around, check the area, check for IDs, you know, just kind of meet with the people, shake their hands, and, you know, let them know that we're here to protect them.
How did you tell the difference between a citizen who might be friendly and someone who's acting friendly to get you close to them?
Honestly, it was very hard, because, like, I walked point every time I was on patrol there, and a guy that's engaging, insurgent engaging at us, you know, probably just shook our hands, you know, 10 minutes ago. You know, we were out on patrol one time at Market Street, because they use kids a lot as targets and to put suicide vests on. And we were standing kind of patrol or kind of watch, and I was trying to get cover around a building, and then, like, swarms of kids just started surrounding me. And all I could sit there and think to myself is, like, oh, this isn't when it's going to happen right here. You know, it's one of these kids, unfortunately, is going to be strapped, because that's what they did. They used kids as protection, or they put, you know, suicide vests, because they knew that we would, you know, a helping hand out to these kids. We'd always give them candy. We'd always, like, try to play, you know, soccer with them in the streets, you know, and that's, so they would always sense that and use that to our.
Do you remember, I imagine everybody that goes, I guess it's called in country, I pretend to sound like I know what I'm talking about, but everybody that does, that goes through something like this, whether it be the first, the Desert Storm, Vietnam, Panama, Nicaragua, anything like that, there's a baptism by fire that you face, especially if you're a rookie, you know, or you've never gone through this before. Do you remember that moment where you felt like you went from newbie to veteran?
I do. I remember a majority of the firefights we got into, because I sit back and think about it now, like, how truly lucky I am to have, you know, even, like, left that country alive. Because there's some moments in there that, you know, a friend told me one of these patrols, the wall was too high to climb. So I got on my hands and knees so they could jump on my back and jump over. And the enemy you know, started engaging us, and I just jumped down in the prone and put my head down. And later that day, my buddy was behind me. Look, he's like, "Matt, there was a tracer round that hit like pretty much inches from your head." And it's like, it's just that moment. It's like, if I would have looked up or if I'd have done something, then I would have been a KIA that day. And, you know, one of the patrols we went on in the middle of the night, we walked, like, there was a propane tank buried in the middle of the street. And our whole patrol walked over it, and it was found by our last two guys. And at that, and we actually detonated that with EOD later that night.
What's an EOD?
Exploded ordnance device.
Okay.
Or disposal. They go out and they blow things up.
Right. So it's like the opposite of an IED. It's intended to destroy those things when you find them.
Yeah, yeah. They use these cool little devices, and they drive up, and they set like C4 on it, and explode it.
Leland, you're embarrassing me. Don't ask questions like that. We all know what it is.
But we ought to know what it is.
We all know. Those of us, we know.
Okay.
But after that thing detonated that night, I mean, if that thing would have went off, that would have wiped out our whole patrol and killed, you know, at least 12 Marines right there. But the first firefight we got in, we were walking in the palm groves, and it looked just like something you'd imagine in like Vietnam. We were going across around this compound wall with these little palm trees, and you know the enemy opens up to our left, and me and my team leader jump behind this tree that's probably, you know, a softball size, you know, tree. And it's like, he looks at me, he's like, "Matt, go behind that tree." And that tree was like a quarter size tree.
This tree isn't big enough for both of us, bud.
So, like you take the softball and I get the one that's a quarter size. That's great.
So I look at him, I'm like, "Yeah, right, you've lost your mind." But it's like our corpsman, which was brand new as well, he had a shotgun and he fired off one shot. And I don't know if it scared the enemy or what, but they quit shooting at us.
Mm. How do I ask this question? Because I've never asked anybody this question before. Did you take out a terrorist?
We got in a lot of firefights and we engaged a lot of enemies. If one went down, then one went down. But I don't know off the top.
Do you ever think about, what it was like to engage another human being in a battle to the death, essentially?
I don't. Like, you know, when they opened up on us, you kind of realize that they're out to kill you, mm-hmm. and you got to do whatever you were trained to do and what you know to do to save not only your life but your brother's lives to your left and right. Because again, we're in war now. These guys, and that's when I realized after that first firefight that these guys are trying to kill us. Mm-hmm. You know, and we got to do what we do to protect ourselves, our brothers, and you know the innocent people in this town. So that was our whole mentality.
Take us to the day you had your, I don't want to call it an accident, it was intentional, and obviously not on you, not by you, but to your incident, let's call it that, to that day, that morning, and then what happened?
You know, Iraq for me, you know, it was four and a half, five really good months of getting the job done, you know, with one bad moment, and that was the day that I got hurt. You know, I don't remember much of like the brief up to the patrol. I know I called home that day, which that might have been, you know, it's like I was all, "Hey, let's go home. We're getting ready to go home in a couple of months."
And that was an uncommon thing for you to get to call home.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the day. And you know, so the thing that I remember the most is pretty much the last part of that patrol. You know, we were walking past the compound wall, and it opened up into an area with a bunch of palm groves, which is palm trees. It's where they get their vegetation and stuff. And I see a white bag leaned up against a tree about 30 yards in front of me off to the right. And that's their indicator. That's how they know that there's either a weapons cache there or a bomb is nearby. You know, so they use these landmarks. So I turn around and let everybody know that there's a suspicious item up here on our right.
A what?
A suspicious item.
Okay, all right.
And then, you know, the minute I turn back around and I look down, there was this ditch that kind of went perpendicular from us inside of a pipe underneath the road. And I was standing directly on top of that pipe.
Mm.
And you see the wires, and I mean, in a matter of seconds.
Was it a situation where, like a mine, like, I don't know if this is how mines work, but from movies, it's about
Cameron,
it
come on, don't embarrass us. Everybody knows how this situation works. We all know what it's like to walk across an
IED.
Come on.
Standing on the pipe that set it off, or was it once you stepped off of it that set it off?
It was pretty much a controlled debt, okay, which somebody was pulling the trigger.
Oh, they were watching you guys.
Yeah, they were watching us the whole time. And you know, apparently there was a squad that went patrolled up and down that road in previous days, but they come from the different direction. Because a lot of times if you come from a different direction, the indicator is out in front, and then by the time you notice it, it explodes.
So you were behind the indicator.
Yeah, so I saw the bomb first, and then there's the bag.
Mm.
But you know, by the time I looked down, there was no getting off that part of the road at Knott. It exploded. I lost my vision instantaneously. And, you know, I laid there awake, kind of in and out, but I heard the Marines around me doing what we were trained to do and what we learned, and, you know, through combat casualty course and all that, and calling QRF and getting everybody out of there. But, you know, a lot of those Marines looked at my injuries because my left leg was removed from my body. My right leg was
in that moment.
Yeah, in that moment. My right leg was severely damaged. It was still attached and shrapnel in both my eyes. And, I mean, I was bleeding from everywhere. And they didn't think that I'd make it out of there alive. And actually, years later, I do a fly fishing trip up in Montana, and my guide ran into one of the guys who were part of QRF, Quick Reaction Force, that day, and he mentioned my name, and the Marine that was with him actually thought I died, minutes later. Because it was very – there's not too many people that step on ID and walk away from it.
Wonder what that was like for the Marine who thought he died and then ends up on a fishing trip with him in Montana.
I know, couldn't go on anything more different from being in Iraq, stepping on an ID, and then all of a sudden, now we're fishing for trout.
Do you feel like that might have helped that guy in a way, too? Because, I mean, I know a lot of soldiers deal with the things that they faced.
And that's the biggest thing.
To see you healthy, essentially.
Yeah, you know, living my life to the fullest. And, you know, and I think that's a lot of the Marines that were in my squad that day. You know, they were actually laying there holding my hand, talking to me, because they didn't think I'd make it out of here alive. And, you know, now when I interact with them, you know, it's still, I think they take it more to heart when I bring up my amputations or the day I got hurt. And because they lost their brother that day, you know. Our squad and our platoon and the Marines that come in with me to the unit were very, very close, you know. And, you know, spending 5 months in Iraq when you didn't have nothing to do but interact with each other, you got a lot closer. And our squad took so many firefights over and over again. But when we left that FOB with 12 guys, we come home with 12 guys. So this is the first time we took any casualties. But, you know, as they put me on the back of the highback, the one thing with the Marine Corps is it's a small world. And the last voice I heard was a familiar voice. It was from my senior drill instructor, who is a platoon sergeant in QRF. He was like, "You'll be fine, Bradford." And then I passed out. I didn't know if I was going to live or if I was dead. But, you know, those words, "You'll be fine, Bradford," has been kind of my motivation for the last 12 years. And, you know, when I feel like I'm getting weak or it's trying times, I can't make it no more, then I know that everything at the end of the day is going to be fine, and including myself.
Let's back up real quick and talk about this. People talk about all the time that when they're facing that near death or possible death experience, things that they think about, things that pass through their minds. You mentioned, you know, you're hearing all this around you because you can't see now. You're hearing the QRF team. You're hearing your senior drill instructor say, "You'll be all right, Bradford." What are you thinking? I mean, because this has to my imagination. I make up that this from injury, from explosion to up on that what I guess ambulance is how I would call it, where they take you away. I'm thinking 30 minutes to an hour, maybe far less than it. I don't know. But what's going through your mind in those moments? What are you thinking about? Family? Are you thinking about why me? I mean, what are you thinking about?
I think it happened so quick in my body. Like, I was so in shock that it just seemed like a nightmare. Like, I didn't feel anything. I could just hear what's going around me. And I think just the fact that it happened so fast was I wasn't thinking anything like, you know, why me? I knew what would happen to me when I signed the paperwork to join the Marine Corps and what could happen to me if I deployed. My biggest thing is I either wanted to come home dead or I wanted to come home with my brothers. There was no in-between for me, and that was my mindset. So I was going to go over there and give it all, and I was going to come home either way, you know, in a casket or with my brothers. But that moment, it's just like listening to it, like them calling QRF on the radio, them putting tourniquets on my legs, you know, them sitting there talking to me, holding my hand. It truly shows the love of a brother, the love of a warrior, a camaraderie that we have. That, you know, that part of the day, you know, it's everything stopped. The world stopped. There's no more world or no more war going on. We're not in a combat zone. You're there to truly, you know, be there for your brother that's fighting for his life right now. And as I said earlier, they didn't think I was going to walk away from that alive. So they're going to try to spend every minute that they can with me. And it's just, and that's the one thing with a lot of time in Iraq is like when you're in memorial service, yes, you do the memorial service, you can have your moments, but you got to strap on to get ready for another patrol. Yeah. There's no time to sit back and think about it. And, you know, as I got in the medevac and they took me to the little hospital base we had and waited for the helo to get there, I mean, my platoon or my squad just stayed out at that fought or that house that I got blown up at. Mm. They were patrolling around trying to find the guy that pulled that trigger. Mm. You know, and
did they ever find him?
They said they did. My first sergeant actually told me, I think, you know, 3 or 4 months later, they found him in a different town. But
what happened?
Yeah, you know, it's you never know if he's
he no longer with us.
I mean,
he's not here in the studio.
Yeah,
no, I just
but you know, it's like.
I like Matt's reaction.
I was happy to know that they.
Matt's not going to say either way. Yeah, he's leaving that up for you to decide, Leland. Yeah. Leland, you decide if he's still with us.
I could probably tell you this. I'm living a better life than he probably is. So.
Probably true. Yeah.
And that's the whole thing with my life now is that I never want him to ever get that sense of relief that he defeated me. Mm. You know, he knocked me down because he set up a bomb, but I got up. And
wow.
But you know, like when my first sergeant told me that they got him. I was happy at that time, but I mean, I never really knew, honestly, if they did get him or if he's just telling me, you know, to make me feel better. But I do know that I walked away from that, and we walked away from Haditha as a unit, as brothers, a stronger group of guys, you know, because what we did were there was truly amazing.
So what gave you the most closure? Was it finding out that they theoretically got the guy? Or, because here's another thing that's amazing about your story, Matt Bradford, is that you re-enlisted after all of this.
Yeah,
you wanted to go back. What in this process?
The only blind amputee re-enlist ever in the history of the Marine Corps.
It's insane. And well, first of all, how were you able to do that? And secondly, did that what gave you the most closure in all of this? Or is there closure? And is it still an open-ended thing for you?
The thing that when I first got hurt, I dealt with the depression, the guilt. Like, I didn't want to live no more because, like I said, I wanted to either come home with my brothers or not come home at all. And something in the Bethesda Hospital on the fifth floor, like, the light just switched on. And I was 20 years old, and I realized then that there's a life outside those hospital doors. And I'm going to go out, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to knock this out because anything in life I could do, I might do it differently, but I could do it. And that's the mindset that I had. And from then on, I was like, all right, I'm going to reenlist in the Marine Corps because I want to be there to help out other service members that are dealing with these injuries. Because at that time, I was probably one of the worst victims coming home from war with no legs and no vision. And I wanted to share my story with them. And that's the one thing I realized on January 18, 2007, like I said earlier, there's not two people to step on ID and walk away from it. And the Lord above kept me alive for some reason, you know, and I always tell people that he knew my path before I knew it. And he knew that I'd live a life with inspiration and motivation. But now it's my turn to join that patrol, that mission, and pursue that inspiration and motivation to share with others.
So in what ways are you doing that? I mean, I see the shirt you've got on, and you and I've talked about your no legs, no vision, no problem hashtag. But you're climbing mountains, you're doing Spartan races. I mean, look, it's one thing, Matt, to go around and speak and do interviews like this and tell your story and talk about, you know, overcoming. And yeah, I've got no legs, I've got no vision, but I can still live a normal life. You're not living a normal life. You're living a life far beyond a normal life.
Living an extraordinary life.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that, you know, I listened to the governor's interview yesterday, and he mentioned lead by example. And I mention that a lot of times when I speak.
The governor's interview on the Disruption Zone?
The Disruption Zone.
How about that? Yeah. Little plug. Thanks.
But that lead by example, something we learned a lot in the military, and I learned it in the military course, but also in therapy. And when my physical therapist walked up to me, he was like, Matt, you can't see this, but every time you walk in here and you put your legs on, people stare at you as you walk out. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? They see you come to work every single day. And, you know, and that's the one thing with, you don't need to be a strong vocal leader. You don't need to yell all the time. But if you get up every morning and you live life to the fullest, you're motivated to attack each and every day. That's the way to success. And that's how I live my life. It's like, you know, I wake up every single morning and I just like, all right, what am I going to do today? You know, what am I going to do to go out and inspire and motivate others? If I could do that one, you know, at least one person a day, then that's a job well done for me. You know, and that's like I said earlier. It's like, you know, we're all brought on this world to serve in some capacity. I served my time in the Marine Corps. It put me in this position. Now it's my turn to serve by sharing my story and continuing to live my life to the fullest because people are watching. And I'm always about, like, I, in the Marine Corps, we learn about the bare minimum. You never want to set your life to the bare minimum. You want to keep pushing and challenging yourself. And that's what I keep doing. Like, you know, I do marathons. marathons are getting easier now. So I'm going to try to push
for more. You've done 26 marathons, right?
Well, I've done six, but...
Or six marathons, and it's like 26-something. It's a half,
more than one. What
half marathons?
I got three lined up for the rest of the year.
But, oh, Lord.
But it's like, you know, I get to the point where I get bored at doing that, and I want to continue to push myself, and, you know, hopefully me doing that, pushing myself beyond my bare minimum will, you know, awake somebody's and up one day and be like, you know what, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to go do a 5K. I'm going to sign up for a Spartan race. And that's my whole intentions with life. You know, it's a... I'm not a hero. You know, I served my country. I served my country because I wanted to serve my country, and now I'm just living my life to the fullest.
How do you do fitness? How do you do that?
I go to the gym about three times a week. I got a trainer. You know, a lot of times I go in there. He has his workout plan, but then I change it up because it's like, no, let's do this. You know, and it's
what's
like,
he gonna say?
Yeah, you know, but he pushes me, and that's what I love. I love to be pushed. I love like.
What's your routine like?
It changes. I do a lot of bench press, pull ups. Crunch.
All I see on Instagram is you doing pull-ups. I
know.
I think that's like, all you do.
Yeah.
You got to check out my sled video.
Like Tom, he's like Tom Cruise in the last MI4
exactly
movie.
He's like, just and to be fair, he's
crank
not.
Him out.
And that's the one thing I like.
He's missing some weight there with his legs.
You know, that's funny when people comment. I was like, oh, you don't have no legs? It's like, these legs are just as heavy as you think they are. So. But you know, it's like that. Like, okay, I'm going to come here. I want to make it a little more tougher.
Yeah.
I want to put chains around my neck.
Yeah.
And I want to do push-ups that way or pull-ups that way.
Yeah.
But, I served 7 years in the Marine Corps, and we were, you know, that was our, we were supposed to uphold physical fitness.
Yeah.
You know, 20 pull-ups, I think it's 23 now, 100 crunches, you know, so I try to make it a point to go there and make sure I can still accomplish that. Because when I want people to look at me, I want them to look at me and say, yes, he served in the military. And, you know, if I got a Marine Corps shirt on, yes, he's a Marine. Because I want to be fit. I want to stay in the same shape or better than I was before when I served in the Marine Corps.
Oh, you want to find out if he's a Marine? Call him a soldier. Watch what happens.
No.
There are a lot of people, Matt, that come home, that are coming home, that have come home from service, that have had maybe not even injuries like you, but they've seen things. And there's a lot of talk about PTSD. And you've talked about it a little bit. Maybe you experienced it some. Maybe you still experience it occasionally. What is your relationship with that? I mean, is it something you battle? Is it something that you think... I don't even want to allude to the fact that maybe it's overblown, because everything's real to everybody. Like, what they experience is what they experience. But what's that like with you?
I think anyone that served on the front line in combat comes home with some kind of PTSD, but truly it's how you handle it, you know, and the way I handle my PTSD, because we all have it. We've all been in firefights. We've all seen dead bodies. I go to the gym. I stay active. I get out and I do Spartan races. I do marathons. I stay very active. I stay very busy. And, you know, I don't sit at home. And, like, you know, because you sit at home, you're bored, and you're not doing nothing, you start thinking about things. You listen to a song, and that song takes you back to where you were when you heard it. You know, and that I don't do that. I just go. You know, I wake up, I read a lot. I do listen to music. Music, you know, I actually listen to the lyrics of a song, and, you know, and it takes me back to when I first heard that song, or I relate it to my life. And that's how I live my life now. You know, I don't take any medication. I don't take any pain pills. I haven't taken a pain pill in 12 years. Mm. You know, the phantom pains don't exist with me because I stay active.
Wow.
You know, and that's how I deal with my pain, you know. And
what you mentioned, phantom pains, that's something with not only PTSD is part of it when there's been an injury. A lot of folks do experience those. So you're saying you've been able to conquer those by staying active and doing the, you know, the challenges that you've been doing.
I do. And that's one thing I've always talked about. It's like, I'll never let my injuries define who I am, you know. And just because I have prosthetics and I don't have no vision, it's not going to stop what I do on a daily, you know, day to day. And so that's, you know, pushing myself and not letting these little habits like defeat me is something that I'm not going to, you know, do in my life.
This may be a hard question for you, Matt. I don't know that I've ever asked you this, but, you know, you sit here and you tell the story and you say you're not a hero. Everyone outside of your brain says you're a hero. And you look at what you've done and you look at what you're doing now and you think, God, this guy's a Superman on some level. But if you were to be honest and you were to look deep down in your soul, and maybe this is easier for you to answer, maybe it's not, what is your weakness? What is something that Matt Bradford says, I've got to get better at this? And I don't mean I got to climb a higher mountain. I mean, this is something that is still at, how old are you now?
31.
All right, at 31, this is a demon in my life I've not conquered yet. And you know what? To be the best version of Matt Bradford, I got to conquer this.
I've learned a lot these last almost 12 years. I've had to learn a lot with myself. I learned that when I do these races, I can't finish first. I'm not going to come at the top of the pack, you know. And being a competitor, that was hard for me to take, you know. And, you know, I have days that I struggle, and those are the days that I don't want to, you know, go out into the world, you know. But you know, I live a truly blessed life. I have an amazing wife that is there day in and day out. You know, she gives up so much to get me to work, to get me to these events, you know, to spend time with the kids while I'm out traveling doing these events. You know, and I got three amazing kids that, you know, and those are the four people that I truly care more about, you know. I guess not pressing, but, you know, what I am to them is what matters to me. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, I'm not a hero, but as long as I'm a hero, they're Superman. That's all that matters to me, because hopefully they're learning that just because you have an obstacle in front of you, that you can overcome it. You know, it takes hard work. It takes dedication. You got to be tenacious, but you can overcome it. And hopefully that's what they're learning, and that's what they get out of it. And I always tell people when I'm, you know, I pray every night that maybe one day I can wake up and see my family again. But, you know, when I wake up, I see darkness. I start my routine. I go put my legs on. So it's like I'm constantly reminded of January 18, 2007. And, you know, and I feel like that I'm having those moments of, like, you know, I start thinking about it and I feel mad, I feel sad, depressed. You know, it's my little daughter. It's my 6-year-old daughter that will run in the room and be like, "Daddy," you know, and it's just the voice of an angel, you know. And I never want my family to, you know, to suffer just because I'm fighting these battles in my head. And for me, the only way to defeat these battles is to take my life. I don't want, because then they're suffering. They're going to suffer for the rest of their life. I want to be their father. I want to be her husband, you know. And so it's each and every day. It's a learning curve for me to, you know, attack whatever little goal, weakness, objective I have. But truly, at the end of the day, when I put my head down, I know that I'm living a blessed life, and I'm so grateful for everything. Because I met my wife after I got hurt. Never seen her a day in my life. Never seen my kids. But you know what? They don't look at me as a blind open amputee. They look at me as their father and their husband. And to me, that means the world to me.
Do you you mentioned waking up, and I've heard you speak before, and you talk about waking up and seeing darkness. Is there a medical possibility that one day you could get your sight back? Or are you hoping and praying for a miracle? I mean, how would that work functionally?
I keep hearing stories overseas, you know, because over there you could actually test humans. Here we can't.
Right.
But to me, it's like I said, I live a perfect life right now. You know, I've learned to live a life with no vision. Yeah, it'd be perfect to see again, but I'd rather see with perfect vision. And, you know, I'm not going to take a chance on my last eye.
Right.
Do some kind of surgery that's going to damage it where I have to another prosthetic eye, even though it'd be cool to have two prosthetic eyes with the designs that I can come up with.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's I always tell people that, you know, just because I'm blind, you know, I still have a vision in life.
Right.
I still live my life to
the
fullest.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it comes, but, you know, it's not going to slow me down, or it's not going to stop me.
Cameron mentioned your shirt. It's your hashtag no legs, no vision, no problem. You just got back from, oh, I don't know, attempting to climb the highest peak in the lower 48, Mount Rainier. Tell us about that trip.
It was awesome. You know, since day one, since I got hurt and I realized there was life outside those hospital doors, there was two things that I wanted to do, and that was go skydiving and climb a mountain. And I did skydiving in 2010, and I got hooked up with the right people. They were changing up their approach to this year, and it was to do more events like climb mountains, kind of more of outreach. And they reached out to me, and it was like, "Matt, you want to climb Mount Rainier?" It's like, "Well, duh, let's do it," you know. And it's just it's a hard. I mean, that was probably the hardest thing that I've done since I've been hurt. But you know, I pushed through it, and that's what, you know, at the end of the day, like, we didn't get to the summit, but we got far enough. And we went through so many obstacles, the boulders, the inclines. It was tough, you know, and but it was just this fact that I, you know, it's, and I think the guys that did it with me were more impressed of like my determination, you know, because it's going to take a lot for me to sit there and say, I can't do this no more. You know, I got to turn back.
You know, it's amazing to me about that, Matt, listen to you talk about ascending mountains, because that's something you've done, Leland. Mm-hmm. You've done a lot of mountain climbing. To me, I love mountains, but I love being on the bottom, looking up and seeing.
Sound like my wife. Yeah, my wife's like, I just like to sit and look at them.
I do. I mean, because they just seem so amazing and foreboding and impossible. And then on the ones I've been on top of, certainly nothing like you, nothing like Rainier or any of the ones you've summited. But that's part of the joy too, is you're up on top and you get to see the 360 degree around of now looking down. And Matt, that's something you never get to enjoy. I mean, that to what I'm saying is, to me, it makes it even more special that you are ascending these mountains, because it's more the challenge than it is the reward, or the reward is the challenge.
And you know, like at the end of the day, like, you know, where I can't see it, like people describe it to me, but truly when you're out there, you feel it. You feel the true beauty around you.
Yeah.
And like, I enjoy, like when the earliest days when I was in the hospital, there was a room and they had a fish tank in there. So I'd go lay on the couch just to hear the water. You know, when I go to the beach, I just sit there and hear the waves.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, that's what I seen, what, you know, a third world country looks like. You know, I almost experienced death. But it's, everybody always talks about going out of this country to go see these amazing sights. America is truly a great, you know, it's a beautiful country that we all need. Just, we got it all right here. You know, and I take advantage of that, you know, and again, like when I have those moments, all I do is just kind of close my eyes and just listen to the birds chirp. That's why I love to hunt, because out in the woods, it's like you don't need to kill a deer, but if you just sit out there and hear the birds chirp,
okay,
the breeze blowing.
You cannot see, but you hunt.
He golfs.
I kill pretty big bucks, too.
Explain.
There's little he does and or can't do.
Yeah, there's a system that's set up that it's a scope. That sits on top of my rifle, and it looks like whoever's guided me would hold an iPad size screen, and you would just sight me on. And once the buck or the turkey, whatever it is that walks in front, you just tell me to pull the trigger, and I pull the trigger and I shoot.
That's awesome.
And then if I miss, I just blame the guide. You know, so
yeah, there you go.
Pretty easy.
It's not my fault. That's
the one thing. Like, I know, Leland, you texted me a couple of weeks ago the song by Dierks Bentley, Mountain.
Yeah.
And it says it in there. You know, I don't know the exact lyrics, but it's like, you better know at the bottom, because it's always a climb.
Right.
And that's life, you know. It's life is a climb. You know, we're never really going to reach that summit of life.
Well, and to your point, to slightly take issue with my partner Cameron here, and more along with what you were saying, you know, climbing the mountain, the summit is important in the view, but it's not the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't always make it to the top.
Nope. And
that, you know,
makes it fun.
It's that grind. It's that accomplishment of, man, we took this thing on. You know, it's the battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes you don't win it, and sometimes you do, but it's the process. Does that make sense?
It does. It's like what people say about fishing. If you go out and you catch a fish every time you throw out your line, then it's not fun. It's boring after a while. But you know that mountain will forever be there, you know, unless it explodes. But you know what,
which apparently this one might,
the volcano
you were saying earlier.
Well, they told me out that, you know, Matt, come up with a backup plan, like if you want to climb Mount Hood or Mount St. Helens, because apparently if Mount Rainier, if it explodes, that glacier will pretty much flood Seattle, Tacoma, Olympia, that whole like northwest part. But it's, you know, the mountains.
Some say that actually maybe a reset
say, okay.
part of the country would be kind of okay.
That's what we were like. We were just like, well,
it's beautiful. It is pretty.
It was like, if this thing explodes, Danny, like, who was a team leader, he was like, you live right there. So you're kind of, we need to find their team leader now.
Or get a boat.
So. But that mountain's forever going to be there. And it's just, you know, it just gives me more motivation, more, you know, determination to go work harder. I know what I need to do now. And, you know, we'll knock this out. We're kind of like scheduling maybe late spring to go out there and do it again.
It's awesome. But you this last presidential address to the nation, the joint session, I think is what they call it, the State of the Union. You were special guest to President Trump. You sat with the First Lady in the gallery. Tell me about that.
It was truly an honor. You know, I remember getting the call at work. You know, it was funny because it was like, one lady called. She's like, would you be willing to do this? It's like, yes. She's like, well, I'm going to get you in touch with another lady. It's like, all right. Well. So then it was like one thing at the time. It's like, all right, I need your full approval. Once you get your full approval, then I'll send you your flight. Once you get your flight, you'll do something else. It's like, Wow. But, you know, it was just...
Sounds like being in the Marine Corps.
Organizations. Yeah. Routine. But it was a true honor to be there. You know, it's not too many people get that chance. And to sit there and meet the president and, you know, to kind of like walk, take a tour of the White House and just hang out there. And the vice president, you know, was there as well. And it was truly an honor, you know. And that's why I told my wife, it's like, this is a once-in-a-life opportunity that not too many people get. Mm-hmm. But we got to take advantage of this. And we got to enjoy it.
What was the president like?
Very nice. You know, he asked my wife Amanda and I more about our marriage and our family than my military service. And to me, that meant the world. You know, because a lot of them just like, oh, well, you served. So how long did you serve? You know, what happened to you? But he's asking how
basically all the questions we've just got done.
Right, the ones we asked. Yeah, yeah, it's like,
right.
I got it.
We get the point, Matt. All right.
No offense to you two. No offense.
We hear you.
That and we kind of talked about his eye rolling across the floor.
Right.
So
yeah.
But, you know, so he was asking him how long we've been married, how, you know, our kids and stuff. And we got a chance to meet him after his speech, and he was very happy with his speech, which it was a really good speech. And but they took great care of us up there, and it was an honor.
What was Melania like?
Amanda talked to her more than I did because all I know is she's tall and and she's from like Eastern Europe. So I was like, well, here you go, Amanda. And,
you handed off your wife.
I didn't really know what to say, and that's the one thing of my life.
To the
too.
First lady, yeah, who should be on the cover of every modeling magazine in the country.
Here, honey, talk to her. Yeah.
Bradford.
I
don't know if you've heard or not, Matt, but she's let's just say she's very pretty.
Well, I had to be a good guy.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
And she was actually taller than I was, so I was like, well, she might beat me up.
She had on like 6-inch heels.
Yeah, that's true. But it was, you know, it was an honor meeting her as well. And, you know, we got to try to think of the people that we did meet. You know, after the State Union, the next day, we got a chance to go tour the Pentagon, got to meet General Mattis. Which was an heck of an honor right there.
Okay, now I'm interested in that more than anything. What was that like? Because you said General.
Call him Bulldog.
He was,
Mad Dog.
Chaos. They've all got all kinds of great names for him. He was Secretary of Defense at the time, right?
He was.
Okay, so what was that like then?
Well, as we were touring the Pentagon, I was talking to my friend. I was like, do you think Secretary of Defense is here? And as I said that, this Marine Staff Sergeant walked by and was like, hey, you should come up. I work for the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. And like, that Sergeant Major become our tour guide. So we went to go see Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. Was like, well, let's go see the Commandant, see if he's in. It's like, all right. Went to go see that. And then was like, well, you know, we've seen everybody else. Let's go see if General Mattis is in. And he was there. I was standing there, and you know, I was out of my wheelchair because Pentagon's huge. Yeah. And it truly amazes me you could live in the Pentagon. But I was standing there, and he just like walked out. He was like, how do I do this? Put your hand on my shoulder. And he walked me back to his office, wow. Set me down, and we talked about a little bit of everything. And I mean, General Mattis is like one of the generals, especially in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to serve under that guy.
Yes, you do.
You would take a bullet for that guy. And
why do you think that is, Matt? Because you and I have had several conversations about General Mattis, and he is someone that is of infinite fascination to me. And there's 1,000 reasons why, but to you, why is he that guy? Why is he different than other generals? Why is he different than, as far as I'm concerned, than every Secretary of Defense we've ever had?
I think him serving 41 years in the Marine Corps, you know, he's single. He's not even married.
Right. He's married to the Corps.
Yeah, he's married to the Corps. And I feel like, especially him being Secretary of Defense, is very important to our country because he's seen Iraq. Mm-hmm. He knows Afghanistan. He knows how to defeat ISIS. And I feel like that's so important. And and I know our military, with him in charge, him in the lead, we're going to be successful and we're going to go out and we're going to...
What do you think about his personality? Is it that inspires, you know, kind of reiterating what Cameron was asking?
I think the reason why a lot of Marines love him is because he's so motivated. He wants to take the fight to the enemy.
Yeah.
And that's why we joined the Marine Corps, because we want to fight, you know, and he's that leader that will be right there beside you and not behind you in the command center. So
I remember waking up the next morning after Trump was elected, and of course everyone was just, nobody knew what to think. I mean, nobody expected that. Now there's all kinds of questions, you know, Trump shooting off on Twitter all the time,
right?
His crazy tweets and then the things he does and just questions, constant
right.
questions.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, okay, I don't know how this is going to go, but if he does not get Mattis in a high position, I'm not going to feel
so
safe.
You were fascinated with him before.
Oh, I've sat for hours on end. Go to YouTube and just look up General Mattis, James Mattis, and just listen to
him. The guy's amazing, yeah.
Because here's the thing, and this is not to change subject, Matt, but this is right along with you as a Marine. I felt safe as a man. Because, look, everything that's been going on in our country, the terrorism, the ISIS resurgence, ISIL, Syria, all that stuff. The moment he was named Secretary of Defense, because now we've got a X factor in a president that has no experience being a politician,
right?
No experience doing anything militarily, much less. And so he's got to get people around him that know what they're doing. And the moment he named Matt as Secretary of Defense, I took a deep breath. And I sincerely took a deep breath, because as much as I've listened to Mattis, I trust this man.
Right.
And I genuinely want him to eventually
be like, at least
president.
In this area.
And you know everything's going to be okay.
That's the only area he's in charge of is
right. This
part. And I know he knows what he's doing. I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah.
I think that one of the greatest things that President Trump did do, I agree with you, Cameron, and not trying to be biased, was the Marine Corps, but having General Mattis, General Dunford, and General Kelly, all three Marine Corps generals, kind of in his ear every single time, because they're the ones, they know. They walked the streets of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and General Kelly is a gold star father.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
I just get the sense that if, you know, Trump might argue with a lot of his cabinet. I cannot imagine him going against General Mattis.
I just cannot imagine
General Mattis saying, this is the way we need to play it, and Trump not saying, yes, sir.
But don't you think, and Matt, I'd love to get your comments on this.
Now, Mattis wouldn't like that.
Well, I was going to say, Matt, you're probably part of the reason you're so, why our military loves him so much is because the president would never have to go against him, in the sense that Mattis also knows his place in the way, president's commander-in-chief.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's
what I said. Mattis wouldn't like it if he called him. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Mattis wouldn't like that. Just listening to Mattis talk, he just knows, as you're saying, Leland, I don't mean to interrupt, but
no.
he knows his place.
Right.
The elected civilians, he calls them, that are in charge, that are my boss. I was never elected, he says.
Right.
I've never ran for office. I was appointed. I was appointed by the elected civilians. Just the way he talks, he gets the Constitution, and the Constitution is his Bible.
Right.
He lives by it, and he's just motivational.
And in the military, you respect the commander-in-chief. You respect that title, that seat. You know, and that's what, like, in the military, that's why we're not allowed to, like, pick political sides. Mm. And General Mattis, 41 years in, you know, that's his mentality.
It's nobody knows what he is.
Yeah, you fight for that. What that commander-in-chief wants you to do, then you go out and fight for it.
I don't.
And that's the same thing in the military. It's like, you might not like the guy.
Yeah.
But you respect what's on his collar, and you salute him because of what's on his collar.
I knew I was in love with Mattis when, and not to make the rest of this interview about General Mattis, but though we do need to get him on this show, Leland, and Matt, you need to help us do that. But we had just withdrawn from Afghanistan and Iraq. We had just pulled back, and he was doing an interview where the guy interviewing him baited him into attacking Obama and basically saying, you know, was it wrong for us to do that? And he would not take the bait.
Right.
He said the last thing this president needs right now is any has-been general second-guessing
him.
And I sat there and I thought, I love this man.
Yeah.
I love this man.
Yeah.
Because he will not. He does
not picking a side. He's following.
He's following his commander-in-chief.
Regardless of who that is.
And that's exactly what we need.
It's pretty awesome. Matt, as we kind of bring this full circle, you know, we've both heard you speak. And we've both chatted with you on our radio shows before, and this is the first time we've really gotten a chance to get into a long-form conversation. But I guess as we sort of wrap it up, your vision, your dream, your goal, what do you want people to take from your message?
You know, the one thing with this country right now is, like, we deal a lot with obesity and stuff like that. And it's so easy to go out and, you know, just to wake up and do, like, crunches or push-ups. You know, we need to push on. We need to challenge ourselves to go out and do unbelievable things, because we're truly blessed in this country. We have the opportunity every week pretty much to go to a 5K or go to a gym. And that's, you know, that's how, you know, the lead by example. It's like, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing, you know, and if you want to come follow me, if you want to come join me, you know, I'm always up for it, you know. And that's one thing I look at it. It's like, you know, it's so easy to go out and better yourself, you know, and I better myself by going to the gym or waking up each and every day with the motivation to you know, attack that day, to conquer that mountain. And, you know, I do that with a positive attitude. You know, I'm resilient with the, you know, all objects in front of me. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like I never quit, and I love life. I enjoy each and every day. And, you know, in 2005, I received my Eagle Gold Banker, in 2012, I got out of the Marine Corps, and 6 years later, I'm still a Marine, and that's a title I get to hold, take to the grave.
And does regularly.
And that's my motivation each and every day. Is like I said earlier, is like to never let that insurgent who blew me up get a sense of relief that he defeated me wherever he is around this world, you know. And you know, failure's not being knocked down; it's staying down. And I'm not a failure, and I'm never going to quit. You know, so I'm going to keep pushing myself to do these unbelievable things because I know through social media, through, I don't know, news, websites, people are watching and people are observing. And I feel like if I go out and give it all, if I go out and conquer these mountains, these marathons, Spartan races and stuff, then it shows the enemy and the people around the world that just because we got wounded overseas, that we're not some basket case. We're not some handicapped or disabled person, that we're still in the fight. And I feel like that shows a lot about a person. That shows that will to succeed and that will to overcome. And that's how I live my life each and every day. And I, like I said earlier, I truly love everything that I do, and I love my life. And the one thing about Mount Rainier, climbing it, we didn't reach the summit, but I got to do it with seven other truly remarkable people. You know, we learned a lot from each other. We told stories. And at the end of the day, those guys are my brothers, and those are the guys that I'm proud to walk alongside with through any of these challenging moments in my life. And, you know, it's just to go out and live your life to the fullest, you know, enjoy life. Because, as I said, we truly got a great country right here. And this country, to me, I think is moving in the right direction. And so,
what am I going to add to that?
Just nothing.
Yeah. I'm just going to ruin it if there's anything.
We're honored. That you came and spent some time in your day with us, and we appreciate your service. We appreciate, I think more than anything, your amazing heart.
Yeah.
It's pretty inspiring. And I'll just say this. I know that the other day I drove past in Nicholasville, there was a march of military members, and I forget the name of the organization, but it's...
Ruck to Remember?
Yeah, I think that's it, with the 22, yeah, the banners of the 22. There's 22 of our veterans commit suicide every day. And you know, we just need to think about that and pray for them and try to get them in front of people like Matt Bradford who bring that message of encouragement and victory.
And that's the one thing, you know, at the end of the day, you just gotta be proud. You know, proud of what you did, proud of what you accomplished. You know, it's very simple. Live life, love life. And like you said, if there's anybody out there that's having these struggling times, these moments, you know, I've had friends, I've had almost, you know, probably close to 10 friends commit suicide, you know, so I've dealt with it. And I, you know, I might not be a doctor, a physician or whatever, but I got a phone number and I could help out anyway. I got two ears that are willing to listen.
I will say that, Matt, and just to brag on you a second, Matt, he's very sincere in that too. I had a friend who lost a foot just to a bacterial infection.
Right.
And the first person I thought of was Matt, and I called Matt and I said, would you talk to this guy? He said, give me his number.
That's awesome. When they can find you on Twitter, it's Bionic Matt with a K. Is that right?
Yeah, trying to be young and hip. So I'm Bionic.
I like it. I like it. Well, listen, we love you, man. We appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time today. We really do.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, the Disruption Zone.